We approved financial statements, but we did not approve basically what amounts to a policy change. And I guess I have another question for the auditors, is that now that, because this was approved, and it does contain a policy change, are the auditors are going to go back the past previous years and restate those line items in the previous financial statements so that now, because when the public reads the town report, it needs to be apples to apples. And the only way you're going to be able to achieve that is to go back and rejigger those line items to line up with each other. So, for example, and Ben, I sent you a long email about this, about how in past years, for the town building reserve, for example, it was only included money, new appropriations in that line item. It did not include reappropriations from surplus. So are the auditors going to go back and adjust those line items in past financial statements so that when the town report is published that they can see from year to year, this is how much was put into the town building reserve? Because you're going to have to do that in order to make that work.
I don't think I'm following your examples and so forth, because and we did ask, we did have a conversation with Chad about reappropriation, and he doesn't think it is a reappropriation.
Well, okay, but that's what it is. It is technically...
When you go through a... I think the logic is that if you, in 1 year, you have a budget, and if you don't spend... You know, the end of the year is never going to be exactly what the budget was, even if it's a penny.
Sure.
So what is left is, first of all, a budget is your best guess. Mm-hmm. And obviously, contingencies happen during the year and so forth. Mm-hmm. So if you have a surplus, basically you're underspending your budget, right?
Or you have more revenue come in.
Or you have more revenues, absolutely. So in that case, the actual is going to be different anyway. Mm-hmm. So what is left is either a surplus or a deficit.
Right.
So when you use that money or not use that money, you know, the next year you have a budget and you have that money in your fund balance or not.
Right. But
and so decisions are made, but it doesn't mean that if you have a surplus, you have to, it's a reappropriation of that same money. It's just that at the end of the year, the fact is you're going to have, it's what's left.
Well, that understood. And, you know, you've got kind of an accountant's point of view and you've got kind of a legal point of view from VLCT, and those two views don't exactly line up. So in VLCT's world, it's a reappropriation. So from a legal standpoint, it's a reappropriation. I mean, that is the terminology that's used. But still, we're not talking about the same thing. What I'm talking about is if you go back, and Ben has the email I sent him, I can forward it to you, Nancy. When we appropriate new money to a town reserve account, like $10,000, right? Let's say we appropriated last year, just hypothetically, even though the email I sent has actual examples. If we only appropriated $10,000 in, quote, new money to the town building reserve last year, but we also, through an article, appropriated $50,000 to that same town building reserve, but that's not reflected in the line item in this financial statement, are the auditors going to go back and plus up the last year and the year before that and say, actually, it wasn't 10,000, it was 60. Because 50 of it came from the surplus, because those line items are only showing new appropriated money. And so in order to, this policy change that has just been adopted through this budget, in order for past years to sync up with each other, you're going to have to go back and restate those reserve funds so that they are inclusive of the money that was appropriated from the surpluses, past surpluses. That's the only way those... Because people reading the town report, it's not going to line up. what just got approved is not going to line up.
We specifically asked Chad if what was displayed in the 2021 column was inconsistent with the, because he got the same spreadsheet, the same financial statements as was sent to the board on the 4th, and he looked at them, and we asked specifically if they were inconsistent, and he said no.
He might not be seeing the same thing.
But I mean, I don't, and I have your email. I'm not sure I follow. I think we're doing the budget for this year consistent with how the budget was done for last year, which also has a surplus.
It's not. We can sit down and work through it. But
if we zero out those three lines, those reserve lines that you proposed doing, then another number somewhere else in this budget has to change. Will the taxes to be raised?
No. Let me pull up the email and I'll tell you. I'll give you a tangible example.
I think it'd be helpful for Nancy and me to know exactly what changes you'd propose.
Yeah, do you want to meet offline and I'll show you what I'm talking about?
I'm not really following you.
Because every year we've had appropriations for reserves.
Yeah, I mean, there are 3 years. I gave Ben some tangible examples. But basically, you'd have to go back in 3 years of financial statements and basically adjust how much
you can't. You can't go back.
Sure, you can. You can restate financials.
These reports are in the town report. You can't go back and change them all. It is what it is. We have changed how it is depicted, and that's fine. But you can't go back and rework all previous documents to now reflect what's there. Those reserve account pages that Nancy and Ben have put together and the auditors before them, Laura Kent, are very helpful. And they show exactly what deposits are going into those accounts every year. It just so happens that this year we're taking the entire balance of the fund balance and saying we're going to use it to offset taxes, and we are showing those reserve amounts, whether it be old money, new money, or money out of the sky. It doesn't make any difference. We're showing them in the budget where they are going. And in years to come, it will be far clearer. Just because they've always done it in a piecemeal approach, where sometimes it goes into an appropriation and sometimes it goes into an appropriation article or reappropriation, if that's what you wish to call it, and then sometimes it's new money that's going to go in over here, it's more confusing than just saying this is what we're going to fund the reserve accounts with, and we're going to take that fund balance and reduce taxes by it. And to be quite honest, this is only, as you pointed out to me in an email, this is only a budget. This is only a guideline. And I can assure you that if we run $20,000 over in legal fees, that's going to get covered somewhere else in the budget. It's because rarely do we run a deficit unless we plan to run a deficit. And so it's a budget, and we try to stick to the budget. But we don't hit everything the nail on the head. But you cannot go back and start jury-rigging and changing figures in prior to your budget because you want it to look better. The money is depicted in those reserve account balances as to what is getting put in there every year. And that's just a fact.
So,
and what is taken out if we use it?
Yeah, for one, it's not jury-rigging because these should be the same accounts. What I'm talking about should be the same exact accounts. The only difference is that the same account would show different amounts inclusive of past surpluses. If you all are willing, I'd be happy to sit down with you and show you what I mean.
But the reality is, when you get to actual, it's going to be all in its place.
Maybe, but
So the reserve, anything for reserve ends up in the reserve accounts.
Yeah. I mean, if you're willing, Nancy, I'd love to.
I'd be willing to.
Yeah. Why don't we just set up some time and I'll show you what I'm talking about.
I'm sure.
Okay. Cool.
So can we now move on
to
the budget?
Yeah.
Okay. John has come up here to do the capital plan report that we said we would put off until planning committee report that we said we would put off until tonight, and I think we should deal with that. And then the approval of the minutes and the silo distillery permits and the disbursements, the accounts payable, and then hopefully we'll be done enough so that we can start again another day. So let's go to the capital plans.
I got a question. Has anybody looked at the documents that I forwarded to everybody earlier, a week or so ago, or whatever it was?
They got the letter, but not your spreadsheet.
No, I forwarded the spreadsheets, but let me hand these out, I guess.
Thank you.
I guess
with the spreadsheets. I've got
the left hand. Okay. Okay, I've spent quite a bit of time going through the flat plan and the flex plan, and I'll just go through what I've come up with to hopefully better inform you people on the board as to what you're getting into with both of these plans and what you might want to do going forward. Just for the record, I supported the flex plan for the last couple of years, and I did that with a lot of sort of blind faith. I did not really run the numbers. I didn't do the research on it. I didn't plug it out and run it. This year, I ran out a flat plan, and I ran it out to 2052, and the reason I did that was to get a life cycle for the grader, which has a long life expectancy. And so I figured the only way to find out how this is going to work is to see if it's fair for all the taxpayers across the board. And so we did not do that with the committee for the flex plan. We only ran it out to 2031. And I couldn't get, wasn't any traction in the committee to run it out beyond that. So I decided in order for me to decide whether I was comfortable with the flex plan as well as the flat plan as far as viable opportunities for the board to consider, I went ahead and put out some data, called various people on how it might work. The flat plan, I'll just run through this handout first. The capital contributions we adjusted for inflation at 2.5%. Throughout the period, there were no finance charges on the flat plan. There's flexibility with sufficient funds in the reserve so that you can move around the replacement dates as needed. There's an ability after we catch up. Right now, you have been funding the flex plan, and if you are to adopt a flat plan, it is underfunded at this point in time, so there's going to have to be a catch-up. And the flat plan is fair for all taxpayers throughout the service life of the equipment. The flex plan, if you look at the objectives that were written down as to how the flex plan is supposed to work, that for all the equipment with a service life of 15 years or greater, which would include the grader, the loader, the excavator, and the tractor with the mower, would be funded by one half of the reserve contribution would be paid by future taxpayers. And so if you run that through and you figure out how is it going to be paid with future taxpayers, the obvious, there are several methods of methodology that we that plan considered at the time was financing it. And so I called up John Deere Finance and Caterpillar Finance, and as well as the state of Vermont offers a loan out there for up to $110,000. They have $1.5 million cap in the loan account, and you have to apply for that. But a typical term on a lease is a 5-year term. And Caterpillar has a 7-year term lease. And so the problem that I see is and I'll run through the spreadsheets after I just talk about this a little bit. If the future taxpayers over a 5-year period of time pay for one half of the grader cost, if the grader lasts 25 years and you're charging those half of the cost of the grader for 5 years, you're sticking it to the future taxpayers more than you should, because the cost of the grader should be spread out evenly over the term of the grader. Interest charges from 2025 to 2052 are $97,283, and that's considering interest at a relatively low rate right now, and there's no guarantee that rate will probably not be any less, and probably it'll be more. If you lease the equipment, and the grader will come due at a different time than the excavator, and so there's overlap on payments, and as Scott had just mentioned, the sawtooth effect, you'll have overlapping lease payments that will add either be $15,000 for the year or $69,000 for the year. There's also some level of additional paperwork and bookkeeping with leases. Leases also require the town to require a non-appropriation clause, and that's a clause that if in the event that the future taxpayers in the town do not approve payment for an existing lease, that you could end up sending the equipment back. It doesn't happen very often, but one of the things that the Caterpillar guy explained to me is if you do send the equipment back on a lease because you don't the town does not appropriate the funds, you lose your trade-in because the trade-in has long been sold. I believe that a lease is appropriate for the town. If, for example, if you were renting a piece of equipment and you decided that you might want to buy that, then, or if something was and you didn't have the funds set aside in the reserve account, or there was a major breakdown, or something was burned up in a fire, you may want to have a lease. But if we're working with equipment such as a payloader and a grader, and a mower, and an excavator, it doesn't appear that there's a better solution than to put that money aside in a reserve account. I looked into the other option that we had in the Flex Plan, which was available grants. I can't find any grants out there that will pay for equipment. There may be some out there, but I couldn't find them. Tax appropriation. If you take a grader and you decide you don't want to lease it and you follow the Flex Plan and the grader is scheduled to be placed in fiscal year 2028, does it make sense to appropriate one half of the net cost of the grader, which is $174,000 in that 1 year? You'd have to raise taxes for that $174,000. In fiscal year 2052, it would would be a total of $285,000 that you would have to come up with. In the flex plan, it mentions that the inflection point, and Scott talked about that at the last select board meeting, and the inflection point is when some of this large equipment is due. And so the town may want to consider different strategies on how it might want to approach high-dollar, long equipment purchases. And the committee did look into some options. Doug Tuttle had mentioned Rowell, who does greater work for the town of Norwich, we hired somebody over here to run our grader, and Rowell, I think, came in for a day or two. And so there are some options that the town may want to consider as far as different strategies on this heavy, long-term equipment. On the other hand, I can't imagine why you would want to be in a situation where you have not funded the reserve account sufficiently. You're sort of in a box. You don't have enough money to buy the equipment that you need, so you have to lease it, and then you pay finance charges, which that doesn't make a lot of sense, or you buy it with a tax appropriation and come up with $174,000 for the taxpayers for that year. That certainly doesn't spread it out over the life of the term. That hits those guys every 35 years or 25 years, whatever you're going to run the grader, you hit them in one chunk for half of it. So I guess, and I had an open mind on the flex plan. I voted against the flex plan as an option unless I saw the numbers run out for 2052. And we didn't run them out. I ran them out. And maybe we should just go through a couple of those on these spreadsheets. As soon as I finish, you can, yeah.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to answer any questions. If you take this...
I mean, John, you're...
Just take...
Just to be clear,
yep.
John is presenting a minority view of the Capital Planning Committee presented recommendations.
I'm presenting a view run out to the year 2052 on the flex plan, which you refused to give me. I begged you to run these numbers out. You told me it was a waste of my time. You told me you didn't want to do it, and I asked for it.
So,
and you didn't run it out. So I took the time to call up Caterpillar, John Deere, run these leases out. And all I'm trying to do is show you how it looks. If you guys want to still stick with that program, that's your decision, not my decision.
I understand, but I just want it to be clear for the record,
okay,
that John is representing his own individual views and not the views of the Capital Planning Committee.
I didn't think that the Capital Planning Committee made a decision as to which plan.
It did.
No.
So that doesn't mean it's a minority view.
It
means it's his view. But you did not, when you presented this last week, or whenever it was, you did not, it was my understanding that there was no consensus on the board as to what plan there was,
Emily. Two members, Hunter
and you supported the flex plan.
Yes.
To the year 2031. I presented a plan to the three of us, and we all three voted that was an option for 2052.
No, we didn't.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
So another thing to be clear, and John is making it sound like I refused to do something.
You refused to do it, and I've got two emails, Scott, asking you, and I'll be happy to submit them to the board, asking you to please submit the data, and you did not do it. And you refused to give it to me. So I had no other opportunity than to compare these two plans is to come up with the data. You may argue with this data, but you did not give it to me.
Let me just explain why I didn't.
Why didn't you give me the data?
So first of all, I am not the Capital Planning Committee. The Capital Planning Committee is made up of three people.
Why didn't you were the one that came up with this plan 3 or 4 years ago. Why did you not be willing to put the data? You were the one supporting that program. I was asking.
So this is really turning into a complete cluster, because this is somehow being portrayed as Scott Woodward's idea, and it's missing the fact that A, there were four people on the Capital Planning Committee at the time who all supported this idea. Four people. That was 2016. It was presented to the Select Board that year. The Select Board supported it.
Okay.
2017, three people on the Capital Planning Committee again supported it. It was not Scott Woodward's idea.
I told you that I supported the program. I frankly was I was busy on the Capital Campaign Committee, working on the town hall, working on other things. I lost my son in 2014. I bought that program hook, line, and sinker. I bought it with smoke and mirrors. I didn't do the homework and study it out. I made a mistake. I should have done that. I didn't do that. The only thing I'm asking this board to do is to look at these numbers that I put out. If you still want to go with the flex plan, by all means, go and do it. I don't care. But none of us on the committee did this data out. And there's no way that you talk about an inflection point that we're going to lease equipment or we're going to buy it in a one-shot deal, half of it. Don't you think it's fair to see how it's going to work out for the taxpayers? This is not fair for all the taxpayers for the life of the equipment. And all I'm trying to do is point out, if you could refer to this, can you go back to this sheet here, please, and look at that one? That's the last sheet that's in that packet. If you look at that, in 2028, there's a purchase for the grader of $410,000. There's a 15% trade-in on that, which we agreed in the Capital Campaign Committee that we would allow 15% trade for any major equipment. The trade-in is $61,500. The total purchase is $348,500. If you take one half of the $348,000, it's $174,000. If you want to buy that equipment for that year as a tax appropriation, that's what it's going to cost. Okay? That's the grader. If you run over on the last column over there for 2052 and you run a 2.5% inflation for the cost of the equipment, the grader is going to cost $672,000. You're going to get $100,000 on the trade. It's going to cost $571,000 net. And if you take half of it for the taxpayers in 2052, they're going to have to come up with $285,000. Now, there's two options that the Flex Plan offered. You could buy it as a tax appropriation, or you can lease it. If you lease it, the total of all the payments on the lease, let's look at the one for 2052, it's $316,000. The total annual payments are $63,000. So you're going to take $63,000, spread it out over a five-year period of time. So those taxpayers are going to pay for one half of the cost over a period of 5 years. You can look at this chart. I coded it with yellow, which is the grader. The excavator is green. The mower is pink and red. And the loader is a blue color. And the payments, if you decide you want to lease it, you can lease it, and that's what it's going to cost. However, if you take a look at all the lease, the total amount of interest, it's $97,000 worth of interest between 2025 and 2052. So here's my question to you. First of all, the program doesn't spread the cost of the grader over all of these years that people are going to be using the grader. The grader grades the road. It doesn't matter to me whether it's a new grader or an old grader. It's doing my the job. I should be paying the fair share cost of what that grader is doing for me. So the flex plan does not spread the cost evenly. That's number one. So, Mike, why would the town want to come up with $97,000 worth of interest payments to pay for all this equipment if it's not going to be fair to the taxpayers? Why don't you do a sinking fund and put it through as you would for a flat plan? Anyway, that's kind of where it is, and that's the plan that you guys have adopted. Now, if you take a look at, I think I handed in this is this particular sheet here. It should be in your. It's not on the. I gave you this. This is a sheet that I went through all the town reports in 2010. In 2010. Somebody came up with a plan that said, this is the plan for a capital plan. It was $50,000 a year that they decided they were going to allocate for the reserve account for the equipment. In 2011, the people, whoever they were, it was $150,000. In 2012, it was $185,000. In 2013, it was $198,000 a year. In 2014, it was $180,000 and then $200,000. In 2015, the powers to be then had a figure of $200,000, $90,000, $90,000, $110,000. There was no plan in the town report for 2016, 2017, 2018. So then we come along to 2016 and we have a plan. A revised plan. It was $108,000, $112,000, $115,000, $118,000, $122,000, $126,000, $130,000. 2017, we had a plan. 2017, we had a revised plan. And then we had the latest plan, which was $108,000, $73,000, $75,000, $70,000. So I guess if I look at this and as a capital plan that the townspeople have had in the report, that we're talking $150,000 a year, $180,000 a year, and now we're putting aside $73,100 and $75,300. So we're leading ourselves into a situation when the grader is due that we're not going to have enough money there. So the question is, are you prepared as a select board? When the graders are you really want to finance it? You say, yeah, why don't we finance it? Well, it's going to cost you a finance charge. Why would you do that? So I guess what I'm saying is the flex plan is nice. It's saving money for the current taxpayers, and it's leading us into a situation where we're going to be in a bind at this inflection point that Scott talks about. And you're either going to have to raise the taxes. And you can look at the sawtooth on that chart that we just was looking at. You can see if we leased it, this is how the lease payments are. It's a sawtooth. So it's not even, you want to budget, how can you budget this? It's all over the map. So I guess my conclusion is that I think the flex plan. And I have to admit, I bought into that flex plan. I supported that flex plan. And after doing my due diligence, I wished I had done it earlier. I didn't. And so I'm not going to deny the fact that I was on board with it. But I'm not on board with it now. And that's okay. We can have a difference of opinion. But the part that I feel comfortable about now is that you have the data here on how it's going to work if you stick with it. And if you want to get into that box down the road, stay with it. But, you know, we didn't run the numbers in the capital plan committee. We didn't run the numbers.
by adopting the flex plan, all it's doing for a short period of time is putting off the expenses.
That's right.
They're going to come, and they're going to be there, and with interest they're going to be slightly higher than they would have been otherwise. And as you said, whether you're paying for the next grader or the current grader, you've still got a grader that's doing the job.
If I could just say one more thing before we talk, I'll come to you in a minute, Scott. But let's just look at the plan. That if you can look at the plan, if we want to get back on track with the, if you take a look at the first page on this stapled sheet, if you want to get back on track, we would have to come up with $115,000 in 2022. 117, 120, 128, 126, 130, 133, and then we get up to 2030, we'd have $140,000. So we've caught up to when we want to buy the grader. And I calculated from there we could drop the annual fee from 140 to 130,000, and then that rolls along, and then we can drop it again in 2043. So there is some flexibility in moving around the annual contribution depending upon the cost of the equipment and when you trade it, based upon the budget and when actually you trade it. So that's all I really have to say, I guess. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I've sort of got a philosophical question. So with the plan you're talking about, like let's just say we're buying the grader. You would propose that we would save money for the grader starting. Say we buy a grader, and now we know in 25 years we're going to buy another one.
Right.
Would you start saving for the grader the very next year?
Yes.
And then you would plan on having enough money for the grader in the 25. The numbers are confusing, so I'm just asking you philosophically. So you're planning on having the full amount needed to buy a grader in 25 years.
Yeah, but it works a little. The problem is, if you look at this chart, which is on here, yep. You'll see the yellow is the equipment that was purchased.
Yep.
And so the grader is, we had the trade-in times at 15 years and 20 years.
I understand all that. I guess what I'm getting at is you're planning on, in the next 25 years, say you've got it, in the next 25 years, you're planning for that one.
Right.
You're planning on saving or putting aside all the money required to purchase that in a lump.
No, buy a little bit each year.
Well, no, I understand that. Yep. So every year. So at the end of 25 years, you'll have in your bank account the money required to
right.
buy the grader.
But here's what's going to happen, though, Frank. If you look here, and this here, this is the line of what's in the bank. And in this year, there's nothing in the bank here. It's down to nothing. But in order to buy the grader back here, I have to have a ton of money in the bank. So that reserve account is going to be high, but when I buy it this year, it's going to drop.
I understand all that.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, and I forget where I got this from, but you know, one of the problems that I see, and I don't know if you've calculated this, is, say we buy the new grader this year, and so next year we're going to put aside, you know, whatever the amount is. In 25 years, that amount is not going to be worth as much. In other words, inflation is going to happen.
And you're going to get some interest, but not much. You're going to get 0.5 on the interest.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things I've been thinking about with some other things that I've been working on. But so the problem is that that money is losing ground every year,
right?
You know, and so my question is, and this is again, it's a philosophical thing: is what about the concept of saving half the money, up half the money, and then getting a like state grant, and so you're spreading out. Let's just say, for simplicity, that you're cutting things in half. And you're going to save half the money for the grader, the other half you're going to finance, and you're going to spread that out over the next 25 years. Because what happens is,
Let's my example.
I don't think you can finance a problem 5 years. You can't.
Well,
maximum finance was 7 years.
Seven to 10 years.
Possibility of 10, but.
I think there's some state programs. But I guess the point is that I'm trying to figure out philosophically whether you're. I guess this is the answer I want is philosophically, when you buy the piece of equipment, you want to have the money already in the bank. You don't want to look at the possibility of financing it. Because I guess what I'm getting at is let's take guys like Liam. Liam's 91,
yep.
And you're going to make him pay for a grader. That you're making him pay for a grader he's never going to see the benefit from.
But just think of it this way, he's paying for the grader that you've got down there.
Well,
the only guy that's going to benefit is Jimmy, who's sitting in a brand new grader.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to. There's a lot of information here for me.
Yep.
The
way I look at it is, and I think Scott deserves to speak because he's wanted to, but you have to look at this, all of these payments on all of these pieces of equipment as what we're paying in rent every year to have them to use. And whether your truck is on a 5-year life or a 7-year life, and you amortize that out for that number of years, or whether it's a grader that lasts 25 years, you have, let's just say, you have $1 million worth of equipment. That's under, I realize, but let's just take $1 million. And all of that $1 million worth of equipment is going to last 10 years. So every year is costing you $100,000 to run that equipment, to keep that equipment just there so you can use it. That's the rental payment. And it doesn't matter to me whether that grader is 25 years old, and it doesn't matter to the road as long as it still does the job, whether it's 25 years old or brand new, but it's costing you $100,000 every year. It is costing this town $100,000 every year to have that equipment there to use on that these roads, all of these roads, for that particular year. And it's all the equipment, and you can figure, and I don't know how he did the actual calculation, but it's simple. You just take its life and what it's costing you per year for each piece of equipment, and that total is what it's costing you to run this town, keeping that equipment in service at that garage so that you can use it when you need it. And so if you look at it that way, it doesn't matter whether it's old or new. That's rent that you're paying on it every year to use it. And you can take half that rent and you can borrow it if that's what you want to do, or you can make those payments go all over the place if that's what you want to do. But you are not going to change the fact that it's going to cost you $100,000 a year to keep that $1 million worth of equipment there so that you can use it to do what you need to do. And so then it becomes a personal thing as to whether you like to borrow money, whether you like to save money, whether you like to plan for the future or not. And that's something this board has got to decide. And we probably won't make that decision tonight.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm asking basic questions because I'm trying to get a big picture. I haven't taken a position one way or the other.
But if you look at it as a rent for the equipment, or the rent to have it there, then you just have to decide how you're going to pay for it. But as far as these roads are concerned, as long as that truck or that excavator or whatever runs, they don't care whether it's brand new or old. It does the same thing for us. If it runs.
The point I'm trying to make is that a five-year time period. Saving money for 5 years to buy a truck is one thing. I'm just asking the question because saving 25 years, that $1,000 you put away this year isn't going to be worth $200 in 25 years. And that's what I'm getting at. That's the point.
But if you could get a loan for 25 years, then it's going to cost you a significant amount of interest. Interest on a car loan, by the time you get down, it's a couple $1,000. You go buy a house on a 30-year loan, you've paid as much in interest at the end of it as you did on the loan. So if you've got a house to live in that you're not paying anything on, you're better to save that money to buy the next house than you are to get 30 years.
I think we need to speak. to his flex plan, and he's been waiting patiently, and he deserves to speak.
So I want to start right off the bat that it is not my flex plan.
I apologize.
I really am a little bit hurt that it keeps coming back as Scott's plan. Voters in 2016, voters approved Article 17. And in that article, I will quote, it charged the board or advised the board to create a capital planning committee to, quote, among other things, create a detailed capital funding strategy that relies on a variety of funding sources, e.g. grants, financing, and reserve accounts. When this committee started its work, it tried to honor that charge. So this was not Scott's idea. This was not Scott's mission. This was not Scott's, you know, pulling the wool over people's eyes. This was an honest attempt to do the right thing for how we are going to address our capital needs. I will refer back to comments that were made at previous town meetings, such as Scott Milnes stood up and spoke about this very issue, about how there was an equity issue, about paying it forward, and, you know, that so forth. So there were concerns. People have short memories in politics, but I remember this stuff. And so when we started this committee, part of it was to honor some of these things that were brought to the committee's attention. Other things that were said, and I won't name names, but there were people in this room who said, you know, we might not even buy a grader. We might actually contract out services. I remember that conversation. And so part of the thinking, this flex plan is not all about interest and costs. We know Vermont is changing. The world around us is changing. Things around us are consolidating. Education is consolidating. Ambulance service is consolidating. The legislature is still looking at how in the hell we're going to do fire protection in this state with dwindling volunteer services and higher cost, regionalization of fire protection. So I again remember conversations that occurred in 2016 with the Capital Planning Committee that, gee, maybe we should think ahead a little bit because the world might change in 10 years. And we might be looking at regionalization within Two Rivers. And we might be sharing resources. We talked about buying a grader jointly with other towns as a possibility. So this flex plan is not like about purely about do we finance or do we stock the money away in a reserve account. Part of the rationale was so that we gave ourselves flexibility, flex room, that in case the world changed, that we were able to adapt to that. That if we thought maybe we might outsource our grader services to a contractor, we weren't sitting with a big pile of money in a reserve account for a grader and not able to spend that money on a contractor, because you can't out of that reserve account. It would allow us to buy a grader jointly with Barnard or another town and share that, but then the cost is lower. So part of what I'm saying is that this flex plan that we're talking about is not all about the dollars and cents. It was in part a reaction to prepare for the world might change. So all the input I'm hearing right now is basically the world's not going to change. And the way we fund capital purchases will never change. We will always need a grader. We will always need a loader. But part of the thinking that went into this flex plan that is now getting bludgeoned was to give us room to react to a changing world. And so, you know, I don't have any personal attachment to any of these plans. I don't care which one the board adopts. I supported the plans in the past only because I thought it made sense and made sense from our future interests. But if the board thinks that's, you know, this board and some members, not everybody, Steve wasn't here, but everybody except for Steve has heard this before. John's heard it. Frank's heard it. This whole idea about only funding half has been presented twice. And it's fine if the board wants to change its mind. That's fine. But let's not, you know, it's been presented before. This is not a new idea.
Can I comment on a couple of things?
Let me just finish. So at the end of the day, I guess my last comment would be, again, I really don't care which way it goes, but it seems like where we're headed with this conversation is that there's only one way we will ever finance the purchase of capital equipment, and that is by socking away in a reserve account, money in a reserve account. And that is the only way. And if that's the direction we're heading, we right now, I don't understand why we would need a capital planning committee anymore, because then the board's made up its mind that there's only one way to fund capital equipment, and that's by sacking money away in a reserve account. So why do you need a capital planning committee? You don't need any strategies. And we have a fire department that really doesn't want to talk about capital planning at all, so we're not doing that. And if all we're talking about is trucks, highway equipment, and we're only going to fund it through reserve accounts, there's really no work for the capital planning committee to do anymore. So, you know, whatever the board wants to do.
I think there is a valuable for the capital planning committee, and I think it's worked well with you and me and Hunter, and we've talked a lot about doing work on the town hall and other things, and I think it's been a good plan to have. Unfortunately, there's two things that the flex. If we want to talk about outsourcing a grader or doing other things, we don't need to underfund the account, and we get into a position where that's not a way to handle the outsourcing of the grader. The way to handle it is you can pack money away and you decide, we don't think we want to do the grader anymore, then you can get rid of the grader. But don't get yourself in a box where it's underfunded to make that decision. That's not flexible. That's inflexible. And the other thing is that when we had that flex plan, we talked about two things that I bought into. It was unfair to not have the future taxpayers pay for the grader. And that was how I bought into that plan. We want to fund the half of the grader with the future payers. Well, if you look at the numbers here, the existing people aren't paying their fair share. And if you lease half of it over a 5-year lease, it'd be nice if you could do a 25-year lease, but they don't offer that for this equipment. And if you did, the finance charges would be through the roof.
What happens if you're one of those poor people that moves to town for...
So what the flex plan was designed for, the word flex caught my eye, and I said, it's flexible. That's great. Well, it's not so flexible. So if you want to talk about equipment, future way to jointly buy a grader or join it together with Barnard or whoever you do, that's fine. Do that as a separate issue. That has nothing to do with the capital plan campaign committee in terms of this kind of stuff. And I bought into that thing about the future taxpayer should pay for half, but it doesn't work that way because the leases don't run that long.
Leasing is not. I mean, okay. So first of all.
So anyway, that's
yeah.
And after I ran the numbers, Scott, it was a different story, and I made a mistake.
I'm not attached to any outcome here, but I just find it troubling that the only option we have is to keep putting money away at the full amount into reserve accounts forever and ever and ever, and that's the only way, that's the only funding strategy we have. Because that's what you're saying.
That's the best funding strategy based upon the numbers, unless you want to pay interest of $100,000.
Right.
I don't understand why you would want to finance it when this works better.
But. Yeah, I guess if we as a town decide that that is the only funding strategy we will ever utilize. But there are, and you know, we did this homework before when we started the Capital Planning Committee, and I just did some quick searches here while we were talking. I mean, there are towns out there that lease graders. They finance their graders.
No, I know.
So
they get rid of them as soon as the payments are up.
Okay.
They didn't get another new one.
Okay.
So, just out of curiosity, what's the lease payment on a $350,000 grader each year?
Isn't a bad option.
In that sense, the flex plan works. Because you'll have money to pay for the lease.
On the grader, if you bought the grader in 2028, it cost you $410,000. You get $61,000 for the trade. It's $348,000. If you finance half of that, the payment's $38,811 for 5 years.
I think before we're going to entertain any ideas as to what plan we're going to keep or change to, that it would behoove us to do some homework on the whole lease versus buy versus put the money away, you know, more than just this, because as I just said to Scott, the towns that lease these, such as Woodstock, I don't know if it's a lease or I think it's a lease, every 5-7 years they get a new grader.
That's right.
And then maybe that makes sense. So instead of saying we need to keep it to 25 years, maybe that makes more sense. So we shouldn't be making any decisions
other than
continuing what we're already doing.
But I just want to say one more thing. So it never started, this label that has now stuck of being a flex plan, it was never called. I think in our discussions over the past 2 or 3 weeks, started calling it that. It was never called that. And I kind of regret ever throwing the word flex out there. The whole idea of because you can't figure a lot of this stuff, you can't figure out till you get there, right? I mean, we can talk about it all we want, but you're not going to know until you get there. And part of the idea of this was so that whatever path you choose. I mean, I really, John certainly has his opinion, which is fine, that we're kind of setting ourselves up for a horrible scenario, and I don't think that's true, because even if we end up, just as John was talking, you know, come 2025, it's time to replace the grader, and we've only got half in reserve to buy a new grader, nothing stops us from leasing for 5 years with the money, if that's the path we want to go. So this is the challenge, and I appreciate all the work that John's done to really run this down to detail, and this gets to John's point about, well, why didn't you run it out further, is because you don't know. You can't run down every possible angle on this stuff. It's too exhaustive. And so there's these capital plans really kind of, honestly, the what we came up with originally was, as I recall, was enough to make sure we didn't find ourselves in a bind, and that we still had room to react in case we wanted to actually purchase the equipment. So it was a compromise in that sense. It's fine. I guess the last thing I would say is when I look at the town and I look at our budget and I look at all the reserve funds we have and I look at the way we fund our reserve funds, from a budget standpoint, are creating very little headroom for ourselves. Because we are in a certain mindset about how we budget, and we're in a certain mindset about how we fund things. And we have very little room to react to things we might want to do differently, like different budget priorities. Because if we don't get our budget and our reserve funding to what we think is the most rationalized version, and what I referred to earlier as the baseline, we'll never know how much headroom we have to do new things. in our budget. Right now, we're kind of marching through the future with nothing's going to change. Everything's going to stay the same. And maybe it will, maybe it won't, but we're not really creating opportunities for ourselves to do new things. So,
with that, I think that this conversation should end for tonight. I don't think we're going to make any decisions. It's 10 minutes of 10. I would like for Frank, if he's still willing and still awake, to do the warrants, because they're sitting on the table and they need to be taken care of. And we also have two silo applications for when are they?
10th and the 17th.
The 10th and the 17th at Artist Street for Silo Distillery. So I would move that, while Frank is getting the warrants together, I would move that we approve for the 10th and the 17th the two Artist Street events for Silo Distillery to cater. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I will mark these approved.
We're getting more from Silo. Do we want to put them on our candidate list for a blanket?
They've only given us, I think, four this year. And I don't know when their liquor license comes up. This Mary does know about that blanket thing. And I would suggest that if she doesn't care about it, then, and if she mentions it and wants us to do it, we could do that. So, Frank, what have you got there for accounts payable?
Check. I move that we approve check warrant 19070 for $50,814.58. Also, check warrant 19069. For the amount of $3,772.69. Also, check warrant 19068. That's a payroll for the total of $9,568.29. Also, check warrant 19065 for a total of $952.85.
That was for what?
Accounts payable?
Accounts payable. Specifically, police patrol. Check warrant 19064. For $6,317.57.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you,
Ben.
Thank you, Nancy. Is that it?
You just check. This is an extra. No, this is something extra. That's it.
I'll second that. All those in favor of all of those warrants and accounts payable and payroll accounts, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Ayes have it. We have these two approved. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm ready to call it quits.
We've got to.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.